Hi, I'm Ariana Maddox. Whether I'm on TV or Broadway, I live by two rules. Follow your dreams and always wear great shoes. That's why I love DSW. Must-have shoes that pair well with whatever you've dreamed up for your life. Seriously, DSW has all the shoes you need for everything, from errand days to date nights. And they're from top brands at prices you can totally brag to all your friends about. That's why I've partnered with DSW to create a collection of shoes I know you'll love. Because, let's be real, whether I'm dancing on TV, teaching you how to make the perfect cocktail in my best-selling book, or starting a whole new venture, it's all about the shoes. Find the shoes to do all the amazing things you do in my new collection at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
For exclusive podcasts and more, sign up at patreon.com/partnersincrimemedia.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and this is Crime Writers On. Crime Writers On is the original true crime review podcast that digs into true crime, pop culture, other podcasts. And on this episode, in 1958, Charles Starkweather went on a killing spree with his 14-year-old girlfriend. But was Carol Ann Fugit his willing accomplice or his emotional hostage? We'll discover the Showtime series, The 12th Victim. Joining me to get that done and more is true crime author, TV journalist, and host of the These Are Their Stories podcast, my husband, love of my life, Kevin Fugit. Hello, Kevin.
What did you just call me?
Sorry. Kevin Flynn. Hello, Kevin.
That was hot, by the way.
No, it was mean. Also with us is private investigator, certified pet detective, resident cat lady, and author of the Piper Green series of cozy mysteries, Laura Bricker. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Rebecca.
And finally, our resident Doubting Thomas, the author of the City Trilogy of Novels, host of the Strange Arrivals podcast, and our Patreon Deep Dive Book Club podcast host, Toby Ball. Hello, Toby.
Hello, Rebecca.
So, Kevin, this is Thursday's program.
Yes.
What's happening on Monday's podcast?
Coming up on Monday, we're going to be talking about the trending Netflix series. It's called The Diplomat, starring Kerry Russell.
So we have kind of a big topic to talk about tonight with the 12th victim. Should we just get into it?
Why not?
All right, let's just do it. Let's drop the chit chat and drop that first clip right now.
There was a certain you can't make it up fictional quality to it. It's the nice teenagers who are trying to help out who get raped and killed by the bad teenagers.
In 1958, the nation was horrified by a random murder spree across the Midwest by teenager Charles Starkweather and his girlfriend Carol Ann Fugate. Authorities said Starkweather was responsible for 11 deaths, including those of Fugate's parents and sister, but they didn't believe the 14-year-old's claims that she was an unwitting accomplice.
Her expression is still stone cold, and she looks angry. But in that photo, she looks like a teenager.
When he shifted blames for the crimes on Carol, she said she was the last of Starkweather's victims. She received little sympathy from the courts or the public. Even after her parole in 1976, her infamy followed her everywhere, threatening her dreams of an ordinary life.
Well, you can't know what it's like to know that you're a person in history and everyone hates you. They hate you. And knowing you were a victim.
The Showtime series, The 12th Victim, reexamines Carol Ann Fugate's actions and the criminal trial that made her the youngest woman convicted for first-degree murder. It also discusses the murder's influence on movies, music, and pop culture. Spoiler alert, we are going to be talking about plot points from The 12th Victim, so if you want to remain spoiler-free, go to the estimated time code in our show notes for our thumbs up or thumbs down reviews. So, Laura, you feel like this show is a portrait of how far our understanding of victims versus accomplices has come. Like, that is kind of the whole point, right?
Yeah. And I think when, I mean, so obviously we've got, and Carol, and I keep calling her different names because it's such an unusual spelling. We just got to get that out of the way.
C-A-R-I-L. It's very literal.
Yeah. And so we're watching this at the time and we're seeing like old reports and we're hearing people talk about at the time how, you know, Carol is, you know, along for the journey with Charles, her boyfriend and everything. Well, she's 14. Okay. He's 19. And, you know, you have people like, oh, she's a tough looking broad and like all these. And I'm like, tough looking broad. She's fucking 14, people.
Yeah.
You know, but if this happened now, we would all be like, oh, my gosh, this 14-year-old girl was taken in by this guy. And I think we would probably have a different perspective. But
I'm
think
not sure about that.
Maybe not, though. I mean, that's the thing. I am not really totally sure what her role was at this point. But I think what we see at this time is this, you know, examination of society at this time. You have film coverage of this that shows these two young people. And you have remarks of authorities and, you know, people in the public at that time basically projecting that she's an accomplice. And I think there is no question that there was another explanation. And I think that's where I'm coming from. There was no other explanation given at the time. We're like, yeah, Bonnie and Clyde, here they come, the original Bonnie and Clyde. And I came away with sympathy for her. Although, I mean, it's like I've said in things like Making a Murderer, you know, I'm not sure that Stephen Avery didn't do it. I'm sure the system wasn't fair that put him there.
So, Kevin, one thing that I just want to mention to you, because mm-hmm. we talked about it a whole lot when we were watching this, and it's not unimportant in this documentary, weirdly.
Oh, are you going to? I think I know what you're going to say.
People looked so fucking old back then in comparison to how they look now. They just did, right? So Carol Fugate was 14. She looked like she was like 29 years old, right?
Yeah, in some angles. And then there's some photos where right. she looks exactly.
Right. But then there was also
one of the victims, one of the high school victims.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He looked like he was running an AMP.
Jesus Christ. It was like they were picked up by this high school couple. And I was like, those people were in high school? Like they were 40 years old.
Yeah. Meantime, all those clips of Martin Sheen in Badlands. How old was Martin Sheen?
33.
I know, right?
What?
Yes, he was 33 and Sissy Spacek was 25. And I'm like, but all the real people looked so old. And I have to say, it's sort of, and granted, I know that like your perceptions are what they are. People look the way they looked. But in my mind, I was like, you kind of in some ways are like, she was 14, but I could imagine being a person in America and having a child who actually looked 14 and then seeing the way that these people, they said that they styled her for court and stuff and she looked different. But like everybody looked old as fuck in this. Like Starkweather looked like he was 55 years old by the time he was arrested. He was 19. And that's, I'm sorry, that's not unimportant because granted, people back then did look old. That being said, we were just talking about, Kevin, that Carol might have been treated differently today. What are your thoughts?
I think yes and no. I mean, I think that part of the justice system is set up more to find a way to handle a juvenile defendant.
We've written books about this.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also will say that, like, if this were the case today, it would get an awful lot of media attention, maybe the equivalent of a 1958 media attention. You had, like, three television networks, it might get the same kind of Nancy Grace treatment. And then the prosecutors would feel pressure to charge her as an adult. And she was tried as an adult anyway. So I feel like in some ways, I think definitely our perception of a 14-year-old defendant is different.
Outlawed Charles Starkweather and his girlfriend, Carol Fugate, are both in custody, riding separately in a convoy of cars bound for Lincoln. Sheriff Merle Carnop will ensure Starkweather cannot escape justice, while Sheriff Carnop's wife, Gertrude, will escort Fugate.
I think it kind of comes down to the system and our society basically thinks, well, if you're guilty, you're guilty. And that ends up being part of her issue going forward, as she's looking for some kind of redemption or her pardon. You know, the ability to say, look, I've paid my debt to society, or at the very least, hey, you're wrong about what I actually did.
Right.
That's, I mean, I think the provocative thesis here is that she was an emotional hostage to Starkweather as he was going around killing people. And everybody thought, well, because she didn't run away when she had the chance, she must have been on.
She did run away when she had the chance.
Right. But they're like, oh, but all those times before, weeks before.
She had a note in her pocket that said, if law enforcement finds this, help me.
Yes.
And I will say, that woman in the diner who says, I sold her the hamburgers and then she was staring at me the whole time. You can interpret that as she's a stone cold killer, or you can interpret that as she was saying, look at me.
You know, I agree with you.
No,
right?
I know that. But I'm saying what's so wild to me about this is I was like, and they're like, it would be different today. I'm like, we literally wrote two books about young, like teenagers.
Yeah.
Who were like pulled in by older men into murder situations in which they were like definitely less culpable than the older men, right?
Yeah.
And then were treated like as if they were the ones who did the murder because they were there. And so like, I just don't think it would be different today.
Yeah, just to wrap up that thought, in recent times, even locally here, we've seen cases where like the girlfriend is going along, or she's even instigating the boyfriend's murder, like of her parents. Like that's the thing, like people couldn't figure out about Fugate and Starkweather. Oh, you know, she had to been in on when he killed the parents, or you know, all that other stuff. But like in these cases that we talk about now, usually it's a personal cause murder, like the parent is standing in the way of their relationship or something like that. It's not usually a killing spree,
yeah,
right. So it is. Different, but I think a lot of people still like, you know, it ends up creating this trope of, okay, two crazy violent lovers gonna get in a car and go wreak havoc.
It's also a weird detail at the beginning where he had a list of very low IQ, like he was very disturbed. Like, it was really. So, Toby, your notes surprise me because you say the show makes a case that Carol isn't guilty, but you're not convinced. That's basically what all of your notes say. So, just what do you think here? Just thoughts.
Well, so the way it's set up is it's four parts. The first part is just pretty much retelling what happened. And then the next three parts are all trying to make the case that she is more or less innocent. I don't think anything they actually present really convinces me of that. Like it may be true. And you know, in some ways, I hope it's true. But the stuff that they use to try and convince people or try and use as evidence,
yeah, it's not
in
the
my
same,
mind,
yeah.
is all just pretty much BS. And it's mostly people like wanting it to be true and then trying to find things that can try and convince other people. So, for instance, like the evidence that they present is regression hypnosis.
Bullshit. I agree.
Not a thing. All right. Body language analysis from a guy who's a lip reader. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Not a thing.
What the fuck?
Lie detector testing. You know, not really a thing. Like maybe a little bit more than those other two, but still not admissible.
Regarding Starkweather's crime spree, did you believe your family would be killed if you didn't accompany him?
Yes.
This test is over. Remain still for 10 seconds, please.
As far as I'm concerned, and I don't think they present any other like quote unquote evidence. And so none of that to me makes any kind of convincing case. That's you. And I think it's tough because I don't think there's like real forensic evidence that they can go to at this point, or they can go back and find witnesses to talk to again who are going to have any kind of reliable memory about what happened. So you're kind of left with this kind of stuff. But none of that like moves the needle even a slight amount. And then the reasons that they use, like why was she convicted? Again, I just think are just totally wrong-headed. There's, you know, they say at one point that somebody says, we don't like to have these like this much amount of damage done by one person. You know, we want to have it spread out among, it's like, no, like
that's
our nation is obsessed with serial killers, right? If it was one person, like people would be fine with that. Radio host gets a bunch of calls during his call-in show and they're all like, really feel
learning.
He
changed my life.
Yeah. And he's like, well, that, you know, that's, you know, what witness, I can't remember if it's witnesses or evidence, but whatever he said it wasn't that. He just hears some people like sticking up for her. He's like, oh yeah, well, you know, maybe she is innocent.
I'll counter you on one thing. The nation was not obsessed by serial killers when this crime happened. It was before that. But the nation was obsessed with the idea of women being bad always, which is, I think, why she was convicted. I do think people liked the idea of this young man being ensorcelled by this like vixen young woman who, because the first victims were her family, right? So I think that there was something sort of like really intriguing about that part of the story.
Yeah, victims 2, 3, and 4.
Right. Well, yes. But that gas station, you know what I mean? There's something about like, I got him to kill my family and then we went on a spree together. So there's something like believable about the fact that like, do this for me and then I'll go with you on the road and kill a bunch of people. What for me, like the most compelling stuff for me that points to her, which by the way, and I agree with you, Toby, I think she was a victim because I think there's a lot of evidence that points to it, but I don't think the documentary does a good job pointing to. He sexually assaulted like some of these victims, right? Like he went down into that thing and raped body.
Yeah.
He even said she was in the car and didn't participate in that. Like he didn't put her at the scene of some of those murders, right? She's fucking 14 years old.
Yeah. To Toby's point that the only possible way of finding exculpatory evidence would have been if Starkweather said that. And instead he kind of like throws her under the bus. He said, I can't remember if this actually came up in the documentary or not, but you know, he, you know, put himself behind the trigger for 9 of the 11 deaths and said that she had the shotgun for those two teenagers. But I mean, there's no evidence of that. And it's just,
again,
you know, but other than that, you're right. You know, hypnosis isn't going to do
it. Again, though, Kurt Anderson, or one of the experts, says he had an IQ of, 70-something? So he was also a vulnerable to interrogation, too. We have to say, like, he did kill people, right? Like, we know that, right? Because he admitted it.
Yeah.
He is also not a reliable fucking narrator in this story, given interrogation techniques that were used at the time, and given, Laura, right, what we heard on tape that these interrogators did to this girl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So how are we to believe, and I don't want to say, like, I don't want to be a Starkweather defender, right? We heard them interrogate this girl. So how are we also to believe that anything they got him to say is reliable either? What did you think of the interrogation tapes that you heard when they were interrogating this girl?
Holy shit, this would never fly today.
No, I mean, it totally would. What are you talking
about? How far? Like, no, I mean, I was like, I was watching like the one police officer who was interrogating her about them having sex, and it was like, did he stick it in? How far did he stick it in? Did he stick it in?
Did he at any time put his penis up in your sexual organs?
Yes.
And did he stick it in very far?
No.
Did he put it in slightly?
He didn't put it in an inch.
He put it in less than an inch?
Yes.
He did put it in, but less than an inch. Is that right?
Yes.
You know, and then the descriptions that we have, although there is physical evidence on some of these murders, because the descriptions that we have of these murders are extremely gruesome. Honestly, like nothing we've ever heard, like just stabbing people and then like just
shoving rocks.
Shoving rocks and things up people's vaginas and like in a way that is beyond anything we've heard in terms of not only murder, but torture and also, you know, what they're doing with the body afterwards. I mean, it was a whole new level. So, you know, it's hard to say, but I mean, I think overall, based on the interrogation of Carol, I don't feel like we have a really accurate portrayal, or I don't think we have an accurate report from her at the time.
Yeah.
And since then, I mean, and that's the other part about this that's challenging, is we see her in various clips and interviews over the years, but we don't hear from her now.
Yeah.
So all we can really do is rely upon past reporting and past statements she's made. And it doesn't sound like she's in the greatest shape now. I mean, we heard at one point she was not able to really speak. It's a really terrifying case.
Yeah, I have to say, Kevin, I think that his naivete is sort of like, when I look at those murder scenes, I'm like, it's more about like his, there's no delicate way to say this. He's a lack of sophistication as a criminal.
Starkweather.
Yes, in many, many ways. I mean, that's what I just kept thinking about. It was like, this is not like a sophisticated killer. So, Kevin, there's no graceful way to do this again. Why don't we just do the business section real quick?
I've decided to give grace up.
Well, sometimes we can do it. Sometimes we can't.
Want to welcome all the folks at the Let's Do What We Do level.
Let's Do What We Do.
Where
let the listeners know.
Yeah, where we don't have any ads, but we still have this section in your feed for some reason.
Because you like it.
Yeah. Like Toby said, he couldn't imagine that people would pay more to hear less of us. We're going to charge them a whole lot of money to hear none of us, too. We can have that level. But that's what we've got going on Patreon. A couple other things there. If you join us at the leading off level, you get things like the Crime Writers On After Show. You're going to get Married With Podcast. On the latest Married With Podcast, Rebecca and I take a question from a parent who wants to know when to stop letting their young children bathe together. What's that face for?
When they're 19 and
when
21.
When they're in middle school?
When they're 14 and they look like a tough broad.
When they can describe all sorts of murders that they've participated in. That's when.
You also, at the Bricker scale level, get the latest episode of Leave It to Bricker. And Toby Ball is preparing for his next Deep Dive Book Club podcast. The book is Motor Spirit. It is about the Zodiac murders, and that live taping is going to be May 10th. Toby will be welcoming Rebecca Lavoie, Janet Varney, and Jillian Pensavalle, an all-star cast. Also want to let you know that over on These Are Their Stories, we've got a new episode dropped yesterday. It's on the classic Law & Order episode, Double Down.
Yeah.
Actually, this is an episode that won an Edgar Award for Best Television Mystery Series, and the writer of that was someone we had on the program, Ed Zuckerman.
Yes.
This is one in which McCoy and Curtis try to make a deal with a cop killer to find a kidnapped man before he dies. And then when they make the deal, they find out the guy's dead already. So they want to go after him. And, you know, it's all kind of crazy stuff. And we get to go to Jack McCoy's apartment and see he's got a grandfather clock.
And our guest was Tucker Carlson.
No, it was Brady Carlson.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Also, let you know that's Thursday, and so that's when the Crime Writers On newsletter comes out. If you haven't signed up already, go to crimewriterson.com, put your email address in there. Every week you'll get the latest newsletter, which has things like Crime Writers On behind the scenes, new merch, summaries of our reviews, tweet of the week, cat of the week, and we also list our Patreon patron saints.
Nice. Do we list our Patreon patron devils?
I think I just like try to hand that off to you like really smooth. So you could I was setting you
sorry,
up.
Sorry, Kevin, just for the do the hand gesture spike. Again.
Okay, ready? This is how it goes. We also have the Patreon patron saints.
I'm gonna pick it up this time, and thus ends the business section.
We didn't talk about who they are.
Oh, who are the saints, Kevin?
God damn it.
Who are those saints? Who are they?
Our Patreon patron saints are Jessica McNeff and Lindsay Rust.
Oh, Jessica.
Bless you.
Bless you guys, Jessica and Lindsay. Bless you for supporting us. Bless you to those who don't. Bless you to everyone who muscles their way through the business section. Apparently you like it, but we're going to close it out right now.
After that, somebody just said, I should have asked for the one with no business section.
Listen, there's always that FF through the 15 seconds button they can use.
Don't
I'm
tell
gonna
them.
I'm going to go ahead and fade that music out right now. So, Kevin, you thought this show could have benefited from better quality sound design?
Yeah, better quality is always better, and that's why I like to shop at Quince.
Ooh, Quince!
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. So all Quince items are like priced about 50 to 80% less than similar brands, and they partner directly with top factories. So you know what they do? They cut out the middleman and pass the savings on to us.
Why are you talking about this and not me? This is literally one of my favorite places to shop. Okay. I love Quince.
You know who else loves it? It's Laura Bricker. Laura, tell us about the last thing that you got from Quince.
I got my most favorite new prized possession from Quince. I got this really nice black motorcycle jacket, and I am looking forward to wearing it on my little pink scooter as I drive around Exeter this spring. So far, I've just been wearing it around town, getting many compliments, and it really is buttery soft, real leather. It is fantastic.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/crime.
Crime.
For free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
Wow.
That's quince.com/crime.
Crime.
To get free shipping and 365-day returns. So if it leap year...
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
You're out of luck.
That's
then,
right. It's clothes that begin with the letter Q, Alex.
Quince.com/crime.
Crime.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
So, Toby, you can't believe the footage they have in this documentary. What footage can you not believe they have?
All of it.
In the 12th victim.
I was watching it. I was like, is this just like stock footage that they're like sticking in the places
from,
that
like,
it
Sears
seems
ads?
Like it would make sense? But then you like, it's just way too specific for it to be just pulling like random stuff that seems like it would make sense. And I think they do talk about how it's sort of the earliest or one of the early times when people had, you know, cameras that they could bring around to places and shoot stuff on scene. And this is the first sort of big murder case that was used in. So, the footage is quite unbelievable, actually. I thought that was, you know, probably the best part of the whole thing was how rich the visual aspects of things were. They also had some great drone footage of some of the territory that they were covering, which kind of gives you a sense of how, you know, sort of stark and bleak, at least
Nebraska
through that camera, that part
no
of Nebraska
offense,
can
Nebraska
be.
Listeners.
Yeah. Well, it's like the winter and all this stuff. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was the best part. I thought the first episode was pretty good. It's just the rest of it just in my to my eye completely fell apart.
So Lara, what about this woman whose grandparents were murdered? Because those murders were brutal.
Yeah.
Right. And she has decided to take it on as like sort of her personal cause.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of taken on Carol's innocence, right? She's taken on like Carol was a victim. It wasn't her fault.
Mm-hmm.
And her parents, like her dad, mm-hmm. who was the child, his murder victims, like, is not super comfortable with this. And there's this very uncomfortable scene where she goes and talks to them and is like, listen, I'm doing this. And they're like, yeah, we know.
Yeah.
She also wrote a novel about this, by the way.
Yes. And she also testified at the hearing to get her, you know, completely pardoned.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, that whole side of this, again, so like I said, I'm still kind of on the fence as to what I think actually happened. But I thought that was one of the more powerful parts. I mean, there was two scenes in this that were really powerful for me, that's aside from the old stuff. And this scene where that woman, the granddaughter, goes to see Carol and sits down next to her, and Carol's not really able to speak or whatever. She's older, she's having some issues, but she tells her, like, I believe you. That was very powerful. And that was very powerful footage to see. And I think at that part in the documentary, I was leaning towards, I felt like Carol was probably a victim in this. And especially, you know, following the footage of her as a nanny and this family that takes her in. And there was this old clip of her coming in for her birthday and they surprised her. And yeah, we're being led to believe that by this video clip, but I'm like, there's just no way that this person that's coming in could be as cold-blooded as we were led to believe back when the murders happened.
Monday, July 30th, and we're secretly planning Carol's birthday party.
There she comes.
I liked that we saw at least some people in this documentary that believed Carol to show the other side of this. Regardless of where you land and what happened, you've got some people that are like, yeah, we're not so sure we believe the mainstream like narrative that was put forward at the time.
Do you know what I liked that's refreshing?
What?
To see a prison situation that isn't fucking terrible, right? So like this is like one weird case where you have this like woman who comes in to run the prison, who, by the way, looks like a goddamn model at the time she's running the prison. It's like, I don't know where she came from, but she looks like she like stepped out of a Sears catalog and is like running this prison. And she's like, she institutes all these programs where like all the inmates are just like going swimming at the community pool and shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, people are seeing Carol and they're like, and it's like, yeah, like this, it's obviously very privileged. It's Nebraska. It's like not like the way prisons normally are in communities that are most affected by incarceration, but like
have a house coat and these crazy cat eye glasses
and like do actual programming. It is just like nice in one story to see like actual like inmates with programs, especially women, because women never get that in incarceration. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there.
It reminds me of the podcast we listened to. Have you seen this guy or have you seen this man? Where the guy had been in prison for murder and they would go like, hey, we all get to go to the mall for Christmas.
Oh my God. Yes.
And then he'd say, yeah. It's like, hey.
Maybe you shouldn't take a bunch of people to the mall for Christmas and then wonder where they went. So Kevin, what about the pop culture aspects of this? Because that was a huge theme throughout this series. Like all the movies and TV shows that have been made that have been inspired by this story.
Yeah, you know, I really thought that was the most interesting part of this series for me was, you know, the media pop culture analysis of these particular murders and then sort of how they manifest themselves as inspiration for art. So many of the movies that we've seen from, you know, Natural Born Killers is sort of this absurdist, cartoonish, you know, version of it. But things like Badlands and I don't forget what the Nicolas Cage movie was. True Romance, is that what it was?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
You know, all these things.
The Sadist.
The Sadist.
Heathers.
They didn't
talk about Heathers, but that's one too that also fits in this category.
Yeah, you know, I think that sort of the many of the things that, you know, the authors of the books and the writers of the screenplays that they find fascinating as themes for their work are the sort of the same things that police and prosecutors found fascinating in the real life case in 1959, which was fascination with taboo sex, fascination with violence, the shock of angelic homicide. How could these beautiful young people do this horrible thing? And the need for society to sort of restore its credibility through justice.
Those characters become heroes because they're beautiful, they're interesting and charismatic, and the violence in these movies is spatter gore, but there's something really appealing about it.
I'm not gonna say the thing that always, when you guys say it, makes me pull my hair out when you say, well, this should have been, but I would have been interested in a TV show with more thoughtful analysis about that sort of thing. I was really interested in sort of how that manifested itself in pop culture. I will say what it should not have been. It should not have been 4 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, there is obviously this very common thread of like, you know, why it's like always this fascination with like how is like if there's this like sort of cultural thing where there's a woman adjacent to a crime, right? It's like, well, the man, yeah, like men are violent, like men do shit. Let's give him a cigarette when he's doing his perp walk, right? But if it's
like
a woman,
Eve led them into temptation.
If it's like a woman, there has to be a particular kind of evil that is singularly worse. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's kind of what's at play here. So not only is she a woman, but she's young. So it has to be extra evil. Like, it's like the, it has to be like she was born that way. What I found was really interesting, and this is something you see again and again, was she always wanted to be the center of attention. She always.
What 14-year-old girl doesn't, though? Come on.
A thing you could say about literally anyone, once they have become the center of attention. Like, think about a person that you wouldn't say that about once they've become the center of attention.
That's why you're going to jail, Chloe.
Toby Ball, he always wanted to be the center of attention.
Don't they talk at the beginning about how she was, like, very difficult to get along with? I mean, I remember hearing it. I was like, oh, it sounds like she has, like, opposition defiance disorder or something, you know.
Or was 13.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Mom.
Or was having her period for the first time and was like... And by the way, was also a 13-year-old girl dating like an 18-year-old boy with like a 75 IQ, and they probably didn't fucking get it, right? Yeah. And he was sticking it in an inch, and like she was trying to hide that from her parents. No, seriously. She was being taken advantage of by a predatory boy and trying to keep it a secret from her parents. And he was probably like being a predator, and she was keeping secrets from them. And that's why they weren't getting along with her. Like, it all fucking makes sense when you see it in the context of now, but definitely she was the devil.
Laura, you know that a guy who would go to the lengths of killing your family and hiding their bodies in the outhouse would totally lie about only putting the tip in.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's disgusting. The whole thing is very disgusting. Yeah, he'd be played by Jesse Plemons.
Why not make another remake of it? Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all I kept thinking. I was like, he's the Jesse Plemons cast. You know that guy, Jesse Plemons, is married to Kirsten Dunst?
Yeah. He looks like Matt Damon if you left him out in the sun for a week.
Oh, God, that's horrible.
But he's nicer. Apparently, he's nicer. Jesse Plemons is very, very nice. I don't want to sleep on Jesse
Nicer
Plemons.
Than Charlie Starkweather?
Much nicer than Charlie Starkweather.
That's raising the bar.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
All right, let's do what we do. Let's let our listeners know, should they check out the Showtime series, The 12th Victim, Laura Bricker? What do you think, thumbs up or thumbs down for The 12th Victim?
Yeah, I'm going to go thumbs up on this. What I thought was really interesting about this is that it was a really old crime spree, murder spree. But we had old newsreel footage. At one point, one of the things I didn't talk about, oh my God, the sheriff with the Western tie who was talking at one point about chasing them through town. And they had, so I thought it was interesting to, we review a lot of really current crimes. And this was something that I felt like it was like from the like In Cold Blood, Truman Capote era sort of, but a crime I didn't really know anything about, despite the fact that it inspired all these movies and pop culture references. And I think if you're interested in you know, criminal justice. There's a lot of things that you can look at in this and examine, from how victims were treated at the time to how suspected accomplices were treated at the time to how interrogation techniques were done to the fact that they have this like elaborate police chase through the center of town that it was really interesting. Some of it was very graphic, but overall, I mean, I just found this to be a really interesting documentary.
What do you think, Toby? Both thumbs up or thumbs down for the 12th victim?
I hate to go off program for a second, but the one thing we didn't mention, which isn't really a spoiler, is who was that crazy priest who was like moralizing every once in a while?
Oh, yeah.
That guy was so weird.
He was a famous, I don't want to say televangelist, but a famous television personality from that era. And his name was Cardinal something. But yeah, that's exactly how he was.
He's creepy as hell. Yeah, so I'm a big thumbs down on this. The first episode I thought was pretty good, but it tells the entire story. And then it's like, so what's going to happen next? And then I hope this isn't a spoiler. Like, basically the idea is that it's trying to make the case that Caroline Fugate, who was, you know, the quote unquote accomplice, is actually kind of innocent. I thought the things that they brought in to try and make this case were just absolutely unconvincing, and in many cases unconvincing in a way which people who are involved in true crime should know better than to try and convince people of it, because it's just BS. So I was really like, if I was going to tell somebody what to do, I'd say if you're interested in the case, watch the first episode, which I think is a pretty effective job of telling all the details of the case, and then just stop, because I thought the rest of it was quite honestly just kind of a waste of time. I don't really think they make the case. I think she may have been a victim, but not for any reasons that they put forward. So it's a big thumbs down from me.
Kevin Flynn.
I'm going thumbs down. Just basically, I'm going to say that I just felt like I had to get through it. And that's sort of my gut telling me, like, this isn't really interesting. It's a provocative thesis, and it's probably correct. She probably was not an active participant in the murder. She probably was taken along by Charles Starkweather. Not a spoiler to say that's what what they're arguing here. But in the end, it just felt like they didn't make a very strong case other than sort of circumstantial. The evidence that they gave was almost kind of silly. The source material is a book, which just basically makes this argument. And that way, you know, I just thought, like, there's just a lot of times our perceptions of people who've been vilified over time will change. People like Monica Lewinsky or Lorena Bobbitt. And could it be Carol Ann Fugate? Well, I just feel like this is just so far in the past that it's not going to create any sort of critical mass of passion or public interest to make that happen. So anyway, that's my way of saying that I'm thumbs down.
Yeah, I'm thumbs down too. And it pains me only because this could have been fucking great. As Toby pointed out, some of the footage that they have is so good. And like, I imagine a version of this that was like totally like noir and cool and like did a really good analysis of the case and like wove in some of the pop culture stuff in like a really creative way. What's that weird thing we watched, Kevin, that used the film of the crime to sort of tell the story of the... where they made the movie of the thing and they had the actors who were in the movie talking about...
Oh, yeah.
It was the JonBenet one where they was casting JonBenet.
No, it wasn't that. Toby knows what I'm talking about.
Captive audience.
Yeah. And I'm not saying just like that, but I think there is a creative way this could have been put together, like along those lines, because there's so much archival footage here. Or like that thing with the hostage situation in Germany where they used all the archival footage. I guess what I'm trying to say is, there's like other ways this could have been done, that this could have been like a freaking fantastic true crime documentary. It wasn't that. It was just like long, lugubrious. After the first episode, I was like, oh, this is great. But then I was like, what is the rest of this going to be about? And I wasn't wrong. So yeah, thumbs down for me for the 12th victim. I don't like to say it because it could have been good. All right, that's going to do it for us. But before we go, Laura Bricker, do we have a cat of the week this week?
We have some dogs of the week this week.
Yay, my favorite animals.
Yeah, well, it's sad. These are some Exeter dogs.
No sad dogs. No.
Archie, the Wonder Beagle mix, and his sidekick, Percy, owned by my church friends, Bill and Alice, who are also very loyal Crime Writers On listeners.
Yay.
Both passed away recently.
Boo. And, don't like it.
So there's, yeah.
The dogs are the listeners.
No, Bill and Alice are still around because I see them driving around in their little Mini Cooper. And there is a cute picture of the two dogs riding in the Mini Cooper with the top down, having a last hurrah. But I have been following these dogs for a long time, along with their cat friends. They also got some cats from my cat lady friend, Betsy. So I'm sorry for Bill and Alice, but I hope they find a new dog or two this summer to take in their Mini Cooper for rides.
Me too. RIP to your dogs, Bill and Alice, and I'm really sorry. And I really, really hope that you get a new dog that can be Dog of the Week or Cat of the Week someday. Laura Bricker, if folks want to reach out to you to submit their animals to be Cat of the Week, any kind of animal, I personally prefer living ones only because it doesn't make me sad. How can they find you on social media?
They can find me at Laura Bricker.
Toya Ball, folks are going to reach out to you and say solidarity for not liking the piece of media review this week. How can they find you on social media?
At Toya Ball NH.
Kevin Flynn, how can you be found?
Even though I don't have a blue check anymore.
Me neither.
I'm at Kevin P. Flynn.
I'm so bummed, too, because the origin story of my blue check was so epic. If you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you can find me at Reb Lavoie. Thank you, by the way, listeners, for helping me get that blue check all those years ago. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Crime Writers On, and I encourage you to join our incredible community in our official Crime Writers On Facebook discussion group. We also have a regular old page. Just hit there, join the group. We'll let you in if you're not a jerk. Support the show at patreon.com/partnersincrimemedia. You get the Crime Writers On After Show, Married with Podcast, Laura Bricker's Leave It to Bricker Podcast, and Toby Ball's Deep Dive Book Club Podcasts. Our theme song was composed and performed by Ty Gibbons. Our line editor is the terrific Livy Burdett. The executive producer of this fine program is Kevin Flynn. This show was recorded in the Treehouse Yoga Studio above the Mockingbird Cafe in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi Studio, otherwise known as Studio C, the closet in our New Hampshire basement, where we also wear house coats, cat eye glasses, and no makeup until our release. On behalf of all the crime writers, thanks so much for listening. We will catch you
later.
Later.
Did you say chip chat?
Let's drop the chit chat and drop that first clip right now. These people can tell that we're just tired by Thursday's podcast taping, and they're just like, fuck it, Rebecca just wants to get it done.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.